welcome to another episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show. I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
For our third holiday horror special, Mike and I are going to be discussing Violent Night from 2022.
Yeah.
Directed by Tommy Wirkola, written by Josh Miller and Pat Casey. You know, Mike, the director, wrote and directed the Dead Snow films.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's really cool.
Yeah, when I was looking up notes for this, I was quite shocked because those were two completely different movies than this one.
Oh, yeah. You know, I haven't ever seen any of the Dead Snow movies.
I've seen enough. I think I started one of them and I got a half an hour of the way through and turned it off.
I mean, some people really love them and some people just really can't stand them. I don't think there's really a happy medium for them.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And also, Josh Miller and Pat Casey, I think, produced or wrote. I want to say that they wrote the Sonic movies.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Those are both on my list.
I've seen the first one. It was a really well-done movie, I thought. It was cute. I still have yet to see the second one, but I was just really shocked with the amount of talent behind this movie and, you know, the producers and the director and what they've done before. It's always interesting to see what they've done before certain movies because a lot of the time it's very far-fetched.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, one of the fact that David Harbour's in this movie is just amazing to me. I think he's such a great actor. You know, of course, he's most known for Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
He also played in the newest Hellboy movie, and I thought he did a phenomenal job. And, of course, he did a phenomenal job in this movie. And, you know, everything I've seen him in, I've been really impressed.
Santa, as in the real one, is deeply disheartened by the lack of Christmas spirit and belief throughout the world. He still perseveres with his job, though, and soon lands himself right in the middle of a violent hostage situation. The horrific gore and desperate plea of a child ultimately resurrect the brutal Viking warrior in Santa. This movie just all around is... Oh, man. When I saw a trailer, I was so excited to see it. And especially for the fact that David Harbour playing Santa Claus,
mm-hmm.
That's just fucking cool.
Oh, yeah. I will say when I first saw the trailer for this and I saw that John Leguizamo was in it.
As Scrooge.
Yeah. I was a little...
Hesitant?
Yeah.
Yeah, same here.
Because, don't get me wrong. I think he's an amazing actor for the most part. There are a couple of movies that he did that I'm not that huge of a fan of. But I just thought it was kind of a strange role for him to be in.
Yeah, honestly, I couldn't see it.
He pulled it off. He really did.
He did. And for our top cast, we have, of course, David Harbour as Santa, as you said, known for Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done a lot of other stuff, too.
Oh, tons.
And John Leguizamo as Scrooge. I personally know him from the early 90s movie Mario Brothers. We have Beverly D'Angelo as Gertrude, known for her role in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation from 1989. Actually, Well, all of the Christmas Vacation movies.
Yep.
And then we have Brendan Fletcher, who plays the role of Krampus in this. And he's done a lot of great movies. You might remember him from Freddy vs. Jason.
That's where I know him from.
Yeah.
That was bugging the crap out of me.
Yep, he was in that. And he did some other movies. Oh, I cannot think of the names of them off the top of my head. But he did some movies where he goes on a crazy shooting spree. And he did a phenomenal job. They did three of them. I cannot for the life of me think of what the names of the movies are. But there's a great cast in this. Let's just get right into it. Mike, did you see this film when it first released? And what was your first impression of the movie when you saw it?
I actually didn't see it when it first released. Again, it's another one that I would have loved to have seen in theaters. But I did see it when it released on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the first day it came out on Blu-ray, I ended up picking it up. And the first time I saw it, I instantly just loved it. Loved the storyline, loved the gore. Just everything about it was, superb.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the dark humor that was, you know, prevalent throughout the movie was just so good.
It worked really well for the film.
And it really showed a very good comedic side to David Harbour.
Oh, absolutely. I noticed when I was watching this that the logo on the catering company van is called Farkas and Dill after the bullies in A Christmas Story. I thought that was a nice touch. There's a lot of homage to other movies in this.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why David Harbour was so interested in taking the role of Santa in this movie. That was the main reason that drew him to this specific role. And from what I understand, in interviews I've seen him in, he had a blast filming this movie.
That looks like everybody did.
Yes. If you look at the special features, which aren't fantastic on the Blu-ray, but they are worth a watch. They're short and sweet. Well, but yeah, it looks like they all had a really terrific time.
We did. This. You and I have just gotten kind of spoiled from watching the Arrow and Scream Factory versions of stuff.
We have, yeah. If you're someone who likes watching a lot of special features and behind the scenes stuff, Scream Factory and Arrow, and I want to say the Vestron collection stuff they has do. Some really good things on there too.
So does like Vinegar Syndrome, Blue Underground, bunch of other ones out there. A lot of the specialty type higher end companies that produce like, you know, Blu-rays and 4Ks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, myself being included, and I'm sure you as well, we buy those for the special features.
Yeah. I wouldn't buy them if there weren't any special features.
Oh, me neither.
Sometimes I'll buy a few, but mainly, yeah, it's for the special features. So in November of 2022, David Harbour mentioned that there were discussions of Mrs. Claus appearing in a potential sequel during the production of the first film. And he expressed interest in seeing Charlize Theron in the role. The month after, the director, Workola, confirmed that there have been ongoing discussions between him and the writers with potential for a Mrs. Claus, the North Pole, the elves factoring into the story of the sequel.
That would be really cool.
And the filmmaker stated that the realization of a follow-up movie all depends on the success of the first film, which, from what I understand, did a lot better than they thought it was going to do.
Yeah.
I think at box office, after the third week, it made 40K or something like that.
40K.
40 million, sorry. Wow.
I was about to say, that's...
My brain's in the gutter.
That's not very good.
It's not very much. No, 40 million. Yeah, it really did very well at box office after the third week, and I do believe that this was in theaters, but I think it also released on Peacock while this was in theaters too.
I think you're right.
I think so. So for it to break 40 is incredible for a movie like this.
Yeah. They've been doing that with a lot of different movies, releasing them onto streaming while they're still in theaters.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that.
Oh yeah, same here. Yeah, I found it interesting that David Harbour had a mental breakdown when he was 25 years old and subsequently was institutionalized by his parents. I don't really know much of the facts. I just know that there was a certain trivia while I was looking up notes. I found it kind of interesting because he's such a terrific actor and seems like such a terrific guy.
It's nice to see you bounce back from it.
Yeah. So, with all that being said, I think we can... Oh, before we go on, there will be spoilers. I know this movie came out a year ago, so there's going to be spoilers. There always is with our show.
And
so
I'm sure there's, you know, some of our listeners that may not have had the chance to see this yet, so...
Yeah, so if you don't want to be spoiled, turn it off and come back to it later. So the film opens in Bristol, England, on Christmas Eve. The real Santa Claus, David Harbour, he's in a pub drinking the night away before he gets back to his delivering gifts. And I love the way that this opening sequence. It's so hilarious, and it's definitely not how I pictured the movie would open up. He speaks to a nearby mall Santa who's at the bar with him, who's happy to do his job, but old Saint Nick has become jaded and disillusioned with the holiday, and you can definitely tell this by the beers he's drinking, and he's sitting there burping and looking like he wants to drink more because he's just a miserable Santa. As people only care for the gifts and are becoming more and more naughty. So just before leaving, Santa leaves a present for the bartender's grandson, who's confused as to how he knows about him. She follows him up to the rooftop, thinking that he's just another drunk, you know, runs up the stairs after him, and he's nowhere to be found. She looks up into the sky, and she sees Santa riding away in his sleigh, and she's in awe by this.
And then she gets puked on.
Yep. She sees him getting pulled by the reindeer, and just as the bartender admires the fact that Santa Claus is real, he barfs all over the side of the sleigh, which lands all on her face and in her hair, and it is disgusting, but it's so hilarious too. And it's funny because she's grossed out, but at the same time she's still struck with the fact that okay, Santa Claus is real, you know? So, terrific way to open a movie.
That
so
then, was definitely unexpected.
Then it cuts to Connecticut, and Jason Lightstone is meeting his estranged wife, Linda, and their daughter, Trudy. While the two parents try to make the holiday nice for Trudy, they're going through a rough patch, and you can tell this. I think they might be separated or... going on there. So the three of them head to Jason's family's mansion, ginormous mansion, as the Lightstones are incredibly wealthy. His mother, Gertrude, played by Beverly D'Angelo, and I just have to say that she, you can definitely tell she got some work done. But you still know it's her, and she did a fantastic job with this role. You really hate her character, because man, does she knows how to play a bitch. But she did a fantastic job. The little girl, her granddaughter, says that she likes to be called Trudy now and not Gertrude. And Beverly D'Angelo's character looks up and says, oh, that makes her sound like a slut.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Who the fuck says that to their kid or to their grandkid, you know?
Yeah.
But man, she really played a terrific role in this.
She's a hell of an actress.
This guy's mother, Gertrude, played by Beverly D'Angelo. She's an abrasive CEO of her company. She's very rich, you can tell. While Jason's sister, Alva, is desperate for her mother to notice her since she thinks Jason is Gertrude's favorite child. She's joined by her dim-witted actor boyfriend, Morgan Steele, who's played by a guy named Cam Gigandet. I can't say his last name, but this dude, he's
a moron.
He is, but he plays a great part. And I've seen him in a few other movies. One of them is called The Experiment with Adrian Brody.
I must have missed that one.
It is a very dark and disturbing movie, but it is very well done. And anytime I see this kid in any movie, I always come back to that movie because, after seeing The Experiment, that movie stuck with me for like a couple weeks after. It really did. It's just one of those movies that really, it's just wow. It really hits you and shocks the hell out of you. So he plays the boyfriend, Morgan Steele, and her obnoxious teenage son, Bert, who needed a good punch to the face through this whole movie. He's so annoying. He is your typical teenage, like young teenage kid who was constantly on his phone, constantly doing stuff on TikTok or Instagram or whatever and saying, hashtag this, yo, hashtag that. He's so obnoxious.
I would have clotheslined him.
But he's perfect for this role, but very annoying, and I think that's what they were going for. Santa goes through Christmas with extreme disdain, dropping off stuff like money and stockings and other useless gadgets and gizmos, and he is having a miserable time doing so. He eats the cookies and milk left out for him, but also helps himself to other people's alcohol. There's this one part where he leaves a gift to a child in a crib, and he puts the gift next to her, gives her a pat on the head, you know, is really friendly, and then sees the dad sleeping in the chair with a six-pack of beer next to him, and he goes over, takes the six-pack of beer, and then he's on his way. When he gets to the Lightstone house, he uses their massage chair. This part is great. He helps himself to the expensive alcohol that they have in their, I don't know, it's this room with all this alcohol and, I don't know, one of like 50 rooms in the house. And it's got like this really comfortable massage chair that you see like in the malls, you know, it's got like the, you put your legs in it and the whole thing vibrates. Jason and Linda, they decide to let Trudy open one gift early. And it turns out to be a pair of walkie-talkies. And the dad says that you can actually talk to Santa through that. He might not answer because he's so busy, but you can talk to him through that and he'll hear you. So as they leave the room, they overhear her speaking on it as if she were talking to Santa Claus, saying that her only one wish for Christmas is that her parents get back together. Jason and Linda have looks of regrets on their faces, and it's a little awkward too because, I mean, you could imagine you're hearing your kids say this, and you're going through something like that. It's sad and awkward, and it's a moment. A team of mercenaries posing as staff initiates their plan when one of the mercs, and these mercs have code names, and they're all like Christmas code names, which I thought was pretty fun. It was interesting. Gingerbread is one of them.
Peppermint, Tinsel.
Yeah. You got Krampus, and then you got the leader, Scrooge, who's played by John Leguizamo. Well, Gingerbread knocks out the head of security, and then Scrooge, the leader, kills the man at the front gate before entering the Lightstone house and rounding up his other mercs to hold the family hostage. I didn't see that part coming either. I mean, I had a feeling once you saw John Leguizamo's character come in mm-hmm. and talking to the security guard, you knew something was going to happen, but man, I didn't think he was going to take out a gun and shoot him that quickly.
Yeah, that was definitely a surprise the first time you see the movie.
According to Scrooge, Gertrude had hoarded $300 million that was meant to be distributed to the Middle East, and the money is in the vault somewhere in the house. Santa overhears the gunfire. He wakes up from his little nap he's taken in the vibrating recliner there, and he attempts to get the hell out of there, but he's found by a goon who's called Tinsel. He attempts to beat Santa down, but Santa rises and he ends up fighting back. And this part is just a hilarious scene because Santa doesn't want to. He doesn't want to get involved. He says he doesn't want any trouble. He ends up kicking his ass, but he tries so in a way that's not full on. He's not like in full combat here. He's right. just trying to survive the fight. The gunfire from Tinsel's weapon causes the reindeer to get spooked and they fly off. I love this part because he's yelling at the reindeer and everything. So he's stranded there. In the ensuing struggle, Santa and Tinsel fall out a window. But while Santa's okay, Tinsel is impaled on an icicle. And it looks really cool too. This would never happen in real life. That icicle would... If you fell on an icicle that sharp, no doubt it would probably stab through a person if you hit it just right. Mm-hmm. But there's no way... It would stay there as perfect as it looked. It would break in half or something.
Yeah, I do agree. I will say that the fight scenes in this movie are very well done.
There's a couple of them I did have an issue with. One in particular. We'll get to it, though. Since he doesn't have... Here we go.
Ricola.
Since he doesn't have enough Christmas magic to get him out of there, Santa goes to the front gate and he finds the operator dead. Trudy then speaks on the walkie-talkie as Santa picked up the other one in an attempt to call for help. When she asks for his help, Santa decides to stick around. This part was pretty cool because Santa's confused on who the hell's talking to him, and it's really cute. This girl who plays Trudy, she's a really cute kid, and I thought she did a really great job in this movie. Very sweet and innocent, and is on Santa's nice list.
Yep.
Another merc, Frosty, comes across Santa when he makes it back into the house, and they engage in a more brutal fight, with Frosty attempting to stab Santa, but Santa is able to use his magic bag of gifts to defend himself. Though he's unable to magically pull out a useful weapon.
A sword, a Molotov, anything.
I was just about to bring that up. He's like, Molotovs, like anything. Santa grabs a star from the Christmas tree. Well, first, before he does that, I really want to point out some of the specific details of the fight here. He gets the pool balls from the pool table together and puts it in a smaller white... He's got like a white bag or a white sack, and he puts like... 10 of these pool balls in there. And as like the merc gets closer, he takes the bag of pool balls and he whacks him on the hand with it and then like belts him in the face with it. I don't care who you are. If you were to get hit with a bag of pool balls on the hand that hard, your hand would crush. You wouldn't be getting up and you'd be out. And especially if you got whacked in the face. So after I saw this part, I was like, no way would that guy keep coming for him. No way. I don't care how tough you are. That would take a person out. That was one of the issues I had with it. It was a very cool scene, though. It didn't ruin the movie or anything. It was just like, wow, this is something. So then Santa grabs a star from the Christmas tree and he jams it in the Frosty's eye. And it's very brutal. And you can tell that the dude is really hurt and he's making all sorts of like painful sounds. And then Santa looks at the plug like, oh yeah, I could just plug this into the wall. And he plugs it in to the outlet and the star electrocutes Frosty and sets his head on fire. And it's burning for quite some time, too, like the top of his hair, part of his face. I'm pretty sure that had to be CGI, but man, did that look well done.
Yeah, it did. It was really corny and over the top, but
it worked for this. It was great.
I got a laugh out of it.
Same here. So when Scrooge tries to check in with his merc, Santa answers Frosty's walkie and informs Scrooge that Frosty's dead, and the rest of them will be soon, and Santa Claus is coming to town. It got me excited. It was cheesy and corny and hokey, but I don't know. I had fun with it. You know, you got to go into this movie and not take it serious. I mean, come on. You look at the cover, you see David Harbour's on there sucking on a candy cane that's lit on the end like he's smoking a cigar or something. I don't know. And it's called Violent Night, and it's a violent Christmas movie. Of course you're not going to go into this taking it too seriously. Oh, you can't. No. And if you do, you're really not going to enjoy much of it. No, you just got to have fun with it.
If you go into this movie with a serious attitude, you're not going to like this movie.
Not at all. You'll just be nitpicking at every little thing.
Yeah, because that's not what it's about. It's not a serious piece of cinema. This is not Citizen Kane.
No.
So.
No, but there's a little bit of, actually, I should say there's a lot of Home Alone in this, as far as homage goes. There's some Die Hard in there.
Oh, yeah.
David Harbour mentioned that one of his favorite movies is Die Hard, and he liked the fact that it had some Die Hard homage like parts to it. Mm-hmm. I've never seen the original Die Hard. I mean, I might have when I was a kid, but I was never a huge fan of those movies. David Harbour is a diehard fan and mentioned that there's a lot of stuff relating to that movie in this. So Scrooge sends his guys to search for Santa while also taunting the Lightstones. Now, Scrooge is... He's great in this role, John Leguizamo. He really makes you hate him. I mean, he is a good bad guy. I wasn't, because I'm not really a fan of his. I think he's a great actor, but what was that one movie? Land of the Dead? Was he in that? He was in one of those zombie movies, and I didn't care for him.
I think he was in Land of the Dead, I think.
And, I mean, I liked him in Mario Brothers, but that's...
I liked him in Spawn.
Spawn he was really good in. But there's just some movies he's played in that just makes me go, he's not the greatest.
See, I tend to enjoy his more serious roles.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. I mean, I loved him in this. And again, Spawn, he was great as the Violator.
Yeah.
He also played in the movie Summer of Sam,
mm-hmm.
which was based off of the Son of Sam killings. A very, very, very good movie. And he played, if I remember correctly, a detective in it. And the role he played, he did a very good job with.
Either way, he's terrific in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He really did a great job with it. I was impressed. He has his woman Candy Cane.
It looks like her name should be Broomhilda.
Yeah. She tortures Jason by breaking... Oh, wait a minute. It's not Candy Cane. It's Peppermint, isn't it?
Yeah.
I want to say that they called her Candy Cane at one point. Because I have Candy Cane in my notes.
Maybe later on in the movie, Santa calls her. I don't remember.
Something like that. But anyway, she's there and she tortures Jason by breaking one of his fingers using a nutcracker.
Yeah, this part almost made me freaking...
Yeah.
Ugh.
I tensed up a little bit here too. And then attempts to use a bigger nutcracker. Now we're talking about a 4-foot nutcracker here. One of the ones that stands up.
Yeah, she was going to use it to crack some nuts, all right.
Well, she didn't want to. She didn't want to touch him. She said she has no problem touching brains, guts, and scooping his brains out.
Yeah,
she's like, I'm not going to touch his scrotum or something like that. I'm not touching his junk.
I've seen you screw people's brains out.
And then Krampus, for some reason, is like, I'll do it. He comes over, takes his pants down, and is about to put his junk in the nutcracker when Trudy steps in and yells at the villains, claiming that Santa is there to help them. Until Jason tells her there's no such thing as Santa, and that parents put Christmas gifts under the trees, and blah, 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 blah. That was a little bit of a sad moment.
Yeah.
One hell of a way to find out that there's not a Santa Claus. But there really is a Santa Claus in this movie. Nobody knows this yet. So Trudy runs away crying. She goes up to the attic and hides while the goons are after her. And they're looking for her throughout the house. She talks to Santa again on the walkie-talkie. And he proves he's the real deal by recounting the various gifts she asked for over the years. Which I thought was really, really cool. Mm-hmm. The conversations that she has with Santa. David Harbour. Mm-hmm. Santa. They're really great. Some of this movie is a little slow here and there, but the parts that are slow, like a lot of them are with Santa and Trudy talking together on these walkie-talkies.
Mm-hmm.
It really keeps you interested into the movie. It really keeps you focused in.
Oh, yeah.
So there's not really a dull moment throughout this movie. There's always something that comes up that really keeps you focused in on what's going on, and you want more of it. So she talks to Santa again on the walkie-talkie, and he proves he's the real deal and explains the gifts, blah, 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 restoring her faith in Santa Claus. When she mentions the bad guy, Santa looks at his naughty list and sees all their names are there, while reaffirming to Trudy that she's always been on the nice list. And he's got this, like, scroll that he takes out that lights up pretty
much. Yeah, it looks like magically, some sort of futuristic.
Yeah.
Like, something that should be off of Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah. I liked how they did that. It's not just a regular list that's just inked and pen. It's actually, like, very futuristic looking. It's cool.
I'm sure Santa gets all the high-tech stuff first.
He doesn't even know how this stuff works, though, too, he mentions, which I thought was interesting. Scrooge continues to mess with the family by having the adults give Gertrude her gifts. Morgan presents a business proposal to boost his career, which is ridiculous, which Gertrude obviously has zero interest in. And while they're giving gifts and everything, Krampus is basically mocking them and having a good time and laughing about how she hates her gifts and, oh, she doesn't give a shit. And then I think he takes one of the gifts that's a picture of her daughter and her when she was a baby.
Mm.
He takes it and he whips it across the room and says, she doesn't give a shit. Yeah, Alva gives her a framed picture the day she was born.
Yeah.
And yeah, Gertrude just shows that she just
she was such a freaking brown noser.
I mean, look at what you're dealing with here. Yeah, you know? I mean, you got these rich idiots that really only care about money.
Yep. Unfortunately, there's way too many people like that out in the world.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Well, that's all right. Santa will take care of them.
Yeah.
So they then grab Jason's gift, which is a bottle of her favorite whiskey and a note that he doesn't want Gertrude to see and nobody else to see. She reads it, but then says whatever is on it can stay between me and Jason. And you have somewhat of an idea here because he mentions earlier in the film about packing up and leaving the family behind and all of the money and starting over and just getting out from underneath his rich mother. At this point, I mean, that's pretty much what I gathered, that he was writing her a note saying, I'm leaving, never coming back. But you find out that there's more later on.
Yeah.
So Santa finds Peppermint and attempts to knock her out. He tries to sneak up behind her with a string of garland.
Mm-hmm.
And the garland gets stuck on one of those little light-up Santa Clauses and gives him away. And he looks at it and he goes, you traitor. And he runs away because it startled her and it gave him away. So she alerts Scrooge and goes with Gingerbread to find Santa, who is under the attic. The villains knock him out and tie him up. They ended up catching him pretty easily, demanding to know who he really is. Santa then drops the villains' real names. Scrooge is Jimmy. Gingerbread is Bjorn. That's Sweden, right?
Sweden, Norwegian.
And Peppermint is Kyra. And the things they asked for when they were kids, he ends up mentioning, like, you know, you wanted this. How many times did you write me for that stupid huffy bike that you wanted 50 times and I got it for you? And so, yeah, Scrooge reveals his hatred for Christmas because his family couldn't afford to celebrate it when his father got laid off. And he attempted to steal presents from a neighbor's house and ended up scarring their grandfather, causing the man to fall down the stairs and break his neck. Pretty awful. Santa Claus mentions that he can't fix people's problems. He brings gifts. And Scrooge says, you know, maybe you ought to. Or maybe you ought to get involved. You know, yells in his face. From the attic, Trudy creates a diversion. Although we don't know this at this time.
Mm-hmm.
She uses styrofoam through the vents to create fake snow. So in the room, it looks like it's starting to snow. And it looks really cool. It looks really well done. So briefly, this is happening, causing the villains to believe in Santa and giving him a chance to use his magic to shoot himself up the chimney to escape. And it's funny because Bjorn actually sees this happen and he mentions it to Scrooge, and Scrooge says, you know, you see one little miraculous thing and you think it's a miracle or something like that. You're delusional. Or if I saw something like that, I don't know. I'd want to check what I ate, you know, earlier or something. But it's just funny. It all happens so fast, too. So Morgan attempts to escape by jumping out the window. This happens just as Gertrude's extraction team arrives to rescue the family. Now, when Morgan jumps out the window, before he does that, I think he ends up hitting one of the guns out of the Merc's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then his wife says, you know, he's going to save us. He jumps out the window and he looks back and then he takes off running. And Gertrude says, your husband just ditched us here. What a piece of work. So unfortunately, Morgan learns that, well, Gertrude's extraction team that was supposed to come and save them, they're working with Scrooge after all.
Mm-hmm.
And Commander Thorpe, who's the leader of this extraction team, orders his men to execute him. Without even thought, they just end up like shooting him like, I don't know, 10 times or something right out in the open. So he's gone.
I was heartbroken.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Guy deserved it. Scrooge talks to Thorpe and warns him about Santa, and Santa then sees more of these bad guys. Names pop up on the naughty list, meaning he has more work to do. Santa Claus is coming to town. While Santa is plotting his next move, he talks to Trudy again through the walkie-talkies about who he used to be. And this part, I thought, was a really cool little background history on Santa. Mm. You don't get the full story, but you get a little snippet of it. And I thought it was cool because, in my opinion, David Harbour really does look like a big fucking Viking of a dude.
Oh, yeah.
And for this role, he put on an extra 50 or 60 pounds, I think.
Mm.
And if you watch some of the stuff in the special features, I mean, you can tell in the movie just by looking at him that he's a big guy, but if you watch a lot of the special features or the making of it or some of the deleted scenes, you can see that this dude, I mean, he's got to be almost like 6'5".
Oh yeah,
he's a tall guy and he's big and bulky. So the story is, centuries earlier, he was a vicious Viking warrior called Nicamund the Red.
But yeah, this was actually really cool. Scandinavian and Norwegian is my heritage. So anything about that, I'm always interested in. So this part, I just thought was really cool.
Yeah, it's very cool stuff. And he uses his mighty hammer, which he named Skull Crusher. I love that thing. to demolish his enemies. While he has since tried to abandon his murderous instincts, Trudy encourages him to put those skills to good use. And I thought that was really cool because she asks him, why did you do those bad things? And all Santa Claus could say was, I was a really bad guy. It's just who he was, I guess. And so she convinces him to, you know, well, what if you used that to do something good with? And in this case, I mean, you see where this is going.
Yeah.
And it's just fucking awesome. So just as the extraction team begins to storm the house, Santa finds a nearby sledgehammer. Well, first, how he finds a sledgehammer is very cool because Trudy asks him, like, if there was one last thing that you could do, what would it be? And he takes off his ring and he's looking at it and he says to see Mrs. Claus, like, one last time. And then he drops the ring and he's like crawling after it as it's rolling across the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then it stops in front of a sledgehammer sitting there. These fuckers are going to get killed with this Skull Crusher. So he begins to pulverize these goons and also uses a sharpened candy cane as a shiv against the villains, which we've all thought about when we were kids growing up or still think about. I don't care who you are, you've done this.
Yep.
I used to do it all the time when I was a kid. I'd suck on the candy cane until it got really sharp, and I always thought, man, you could stick someone with this.
Oh, yeah. Weaponized candy canes, you know, you can commit the perfect crime with one of those.
I thought this was perfect. I mean, yes, it's hokey. I mean, it's a Christmas movie. You gotta have this in here. I thought it was so cool. He stabs the dude right in the side of the cheek with it. Oh, so awesome. I thought he was going to go for the eye.
Right.
Stabbed him right in the side of the cheek with it. This movie does have its fair share of blood and gore.
It does.
Earlier, when we were talking about the star in the eye and then he plugs it in, I mean, that was... Oh,
that was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of blood and gore in this, but... I mean, most of it is in this scene here that we're talking about, where he picks up the sledgehammer and he starts taking out, I think he takes out like 8 of them or something like that in this part. He just goes nuts with it and he kills them all in all different types of ways. And
yeah, it gets pretty...
It does get pretty brutal and gory, but it's a little dark. You know, the cinematography is great in this movie, don't get me wrong. Smooth transitions, but I thought that the lighting could have been a little bit better for my taste. What about you?
I think that the lighting was maybe a tad bit dark, but considering the circumstances, you know, it being at night and...
In the dark, out in the shed, or in the garage.
I can understand it.
I just wish it was a little bit more lighter so we could have seen more of the blood and gore. I mean, that would have added on to a higher budget, too. So
no,
maybe that's why.
True.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of different reasons why they went this direction. But either way, you still get the idea of what's happening, and it's brutal as fuck.
Oh, God, that scene there where he hits the dude in the knee with the sledgehammer, the guy's knee just buckles.
Oh, yeah, because when he hits it, This is what we were talking about, I think on our last episode, about bones breaking the wrong way. We don't like it.
No.
So Trudy sets up Home Alone inspired traps right under the attic door. And just as Gingerbread and Peppermint go after her, she's got these set up here. So Gingerbread steps through a broken ladder rung.
Oh, yeah.
And I honestly should have seen this coming for some reason, because you see there's a nail there on the wooden step. And as he's walking up, you think to yourself, okay, so, I mean, that's, you would see it.
Nail my ass, that was a railroad.
But maybe, like, they'll trip and they'll get it in the knee or the hand, or maybe they won't see, you know, maybe she rigged it up wrong. No, she cut part of the ladder. So when this dude's climbing up, it causes his chin to be impaled on this nail. He comes crashing right down because when he takes that one step, the ladder breaks and it just goes right up. Oh, man.
And that whole situation for
him just gets even better.
Bad to worse.
This was a great homage to Home Alone.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
think that Harry would have been proud. So Peppermint attempts to get ahead of him by climbing over him, not giving a shit about him, just wait here. She manages to see most of Trudy's traps coming, but the girl still hits her with a few bowling balls. She rigs up this, like...
She
gets hit, like, right in the head. But there's one scene where she walks by the bowling ball and just, like, moves it out of the way. And it one of them rolls out of the attic and hits Gingerbread, causing him to fall ass first onto a bunch of spiked nails that looked like they were tarred to the floor, like rigged up. And only for one more bowling ball to fall and hit him. Well, it hits the nail. Well, he pulls out the nail and he stands up. One more bowling ball comes flying down, which is the one that Peppermint actually, like, moved aside with her hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes down through the attic hole. And as he's standing there looking at this nail, the bowling ball hits the nail and it goes into his skull. Killing him, and
then
he falls back.
On the freaking board of nails.
So there we go again. That was definitely a nod to Home Alone.
That is what one calls a clusterfuck.
It might have been one of my favorite kills in the movie, because
it was good.
It was so brutal and it looked so painful, but they made it hilariously funny.
Oh yeah, I could see, you know, Daniel Stern there, that happening, like in a Home Alone remake or something like that.
I don't care. Harry, Daniel Stern, who plays Harry in Home Alone, he always got the worst of it, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So Peppermint goes for Trudy until Santa arrives and bashes her brains in before saving Trudy. But before that, I mean, she gets stuck on this, she puts down the sticky stuff that's, like, so sticky, like, she can't move.
Oh yeah.
And then she,
she gets up.
She flips. Yeah, well, she goes down like she's doing, like, a yoga pose or something. And her head gets stuck to the floor. And when she pulls up to stand up, it rips part of her, like, scalp off.
It's pretty nasty.
Oh, yeah, and her hands and everything. And that's when, Santa comes out and ends up bashing her with a skull crusher.
Doesn't he, like, she's walking towards Trudy, and doesn't he, like, smash her in the chest with a sledgehammer?
Yeah. Well, she's got a gun pointed to Trudy, and before she could pull the trigger, I believe, he comes out of nowhere, too, because I didn't expect it. I was like, yeah, Santa! And just before he kills her, he tells Trudy to turn her head.
Yeah, turn her head and cover her ears and sing
Jingle Bells
as loud as she can.
And she does, too. Scrooge and Thorpe go under the house to find that Gertrude's vault has been emptied out. And so they're enraged, and they go to confront Gertrude and hold Linda at gunpoint until somebody speaks up about where the money is. This forces Jason to stand up and admit that he stole the money in an attempt to make off with Linda and Trudy for a better life, to distance himself from the rest of the entire family. That's what you find out, what was written in the little note there. Hell of a Christmas gift. But, I mean, if you see how these people are, it's like, geez, you know, I can't blame the guy.
Yeah.
So that's what he wrote on the note to Gertrude, hoping that, you know, she'd see it the next morning before realizing that it was him. When the villains are called away, henchman Krampus threatens to kill Linda, Elva, or Bert. He's trying to decide who's going to get killed first. The
Bertrude.
Bertrude. Yeah, I forgot. They named their kid Bertrude because Gertrude was already taken. And that was the one thing that I didn't care much for about this movie was like some of the bickering between the adults and these rich people. Honestly, it's very easy to overlook that when you've got David Harbour playing a badass Santa Claus. Yeah. That got me through it. He carried this whole movie and it was fantastic.
That whole part, I won't say that I liked it, but I understand it.
Yeah.
Because that's how people act in situations like that.
A rich bunch of assholes like this, I could probably see it happening, no. Yeah.
I'm not saying all rich people are like that,
but there
the majority
are,
of them are.
Right, yeah, there are people out there like that. You're right. So the three argue over who should get shot, leading them to distract Krampus. So Elva, I don't know if that was actually their plan, because they really genuinely seem like they're arguing with each other, mm-hmm. and they hate each other. So they're distracting Krampus so Elva could throw wine into the fireplace behind him to stun him. And then the three bludgeon Krampus to death until Elva sticks a fire poker in his neck.
That
which
was pretty awesome.
Oh, that part was just so cool and so unexpected too. Santa then brings Trudy back to Linda, and this is where everybody sees Santa Claus for the first time, though they don't know he's the actual Santa. They just think he's some guy helping out. So Scrooge and Thorpe take Gertrude with them and begin to make an escape. More of the goons show up, but the other Lightstones fight back. While Santa goes after Scrooge, Jason and Linda fight off the remaining goons in this nativity display. It's pretty cool because you've got them shooting from the nativity display.
Yeah.
And then you've got the three up at the house shooting. They're kind of in like crossfire back and forth with each other.
And that's where I can't remember the son's name now.
Oh, I can't. I'm terrible with names in this.
Yeah, so am I. But anyway,
it's
that's
hard
where
to keep
he
track
hid the $300 million.
Yeah, he hid it right under the hay in these three or four really big, large black bags. After killing the last few goons, Jason and Linda kiss passionately, which Trudy happily notices. Very sweet scene, actually. You see the girl's face, and that's all she wanted for Christmas, and she's getting her Christmas wish. And
Jason,
Santa,
that's what it was.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, there it is. It's Jason. Okay. I also want to mention here that while they're fighting here in this nativity scene, Santa Claus is there too, and there's at one point he makes the most perfect snowball I've ever seen, and he whips it at the dude's face.
Well,
so when there's no more goons left and Santa goes after Scrooge, what was his name? Jason, dad, and then the girl there that he kissed, they're standing there all happy, and the guy that Santa hit with the snowball, he's still alive. He just got knocked unconscious for a little bit with a really brutal snowball.
Well, if anybody would know how to make a perfect snowball, it'd be Santa.
Right. But I just thought that part was so funny. He just belts him right in the face with it, and he just kind of like flips and goes down.
Maybe
but it didn't
Frosty
kill him.
Would be able to do it too.
Probably. So Scrooge and Thorpe take Gertrude with them, Beverly D'Angelo's character, mm-hmm. Gertrude, with them, and they begin to make an escape, and all of this stuff is happening. They kiss. So Santa actually grabs a snowmobile to chase after the villains. How he does this, though, it made me laugh hysterically, because he's got like a sled or something,
mm-hmm.
and he's running after him, and he kind of like cuts him off. He takes like this shortcut, and then he jumps on the sled, and he goes down this hill, and he goes flying at one of these dudes on the snowmobiles, just taking this dude out and landing on the snowmobile.
Yeah, that was the part where he like took Skullcrusher and like broke both of his arms or both his legs or something.
I'm not sure.
You know, it's pretty bad that we just watched last night. We don't remember hardly any of it.
And I was loving watching this again. This is only the second time I've seen this movie. I saw it when it first released and I loved it. And I said, we're watching this next year. And here we are talking about it on the podcast, which is fantastic. But yeah, I don't specifically remember what exactly happened there, and I don't have that in my notes. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. This was actually the second time I've seen it too.
It's such a fun movie.
It is.
So he kills the remaining goons before knocking Thorpe off the snowmobile. And then he goes after Scrooge. The two engage in a brutal fight. He catches up with them, and they engage in a brutal fight with Scrooge using every weapon he has to pierce Santa with. He then finds the naughty list on the ground. Now, first, when Santa comes close to Scrooge is taunting him. So you know that he's got some sort of a plan, because he's telling him to come over here. Go ahead, take your best shot. And Santa's on the snowmobile, and he just he just revs it up and he just books it right towards Scrooge.
Mm-hmm.
And Scrooge jumps out of the way. And there's a little stump right behind him. And Santa Claus hits the stump and goes flying.
Yep.
Big time right into this building. And he ends up in this like room in this building or something. It's like abandoned and been torn apart. And he's in this room. And Scrooge comes in and then he finds the naughty list on the ground. And he sees his name on there. Finally convincing him that this really is Santa Claus. And Scrooge says that killing him will mean that the end of Christmas. Well, it'll mean that it's the end of Christmas and he'll kill Christmas once and for all. But since Scrooge now believes, this gives Santa enough magic to go up a nearby chimney. And this part was awesome. But before I get there, they're out there and they're really, really like battling it. Like David Harbour. Santa, he's got the sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
And John
has got one.
Scrooge has got, yeah.
Has got like every freaking weapon known to man.
He's got these spikes that he has on his feet, so it's easier for him to like control himself through like the ice and everything. And
he's also got
power like through Santa.
Mountain climber's hook. He's got a knife.
He's got all of these weapons. He's definitely come prepared. And they just, I mean, this was a very good battle scene, I thought.
It was very well done.
It was, and from what I understand, David Harbour said that John Leguizamo working with him, he said that he gives it his all.
He said during
the battle scenes, he said he was not shy. He went for it, and he mentioned that he was a terrific actor to work with, which is awesome because, I mean, that's what you want. You know, if you want to make a good movie and you want to have good scenes like this, you got to have someone that's going to be comfortable with you and you know, be comfortable enough to do this stuff with.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what makes good scenes in any movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
The chemistry that, you know, the different actors and actresses have.
Mm-hmm.
That you can tell in a movie if there's two actors or actresses or whatever that don't have good chemistry together or don't like each other.
Yeah.
More often than not, you can tell, and it really bleeds through in the movie.
Sometimes, yeah, but then there's sometimes when, you know, you can put that stuff aside and still be professional.
Oh, sure. But there's a lot of times where you see a movie and you just know that the two people have animosity, and just, the movie Valerian is one of them. I've never seen it myself, but my stepfather went and saw it, and he was so disappointed in it, and he said, and it's, again, he said the two main characters just had zero chemistry, and they were supposed to be, like, you know, the big romantic, you know, part of the movie.
Yeah, that's too bad, you know? It really is. Well, for this movie, they worked really well together, and it shows on screen. It really does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, the whole cast in this worked so well together. And again, it looks like everybody had such a great time.
Yeah.
And that means, you know, that counts for a lot.
It really does. And it being a Christmas movie, it's not really a horror movie. It's more of a...
I'm going to get into that.
Well, I think that it is, it has elements of horror. I wouldn't call it a straight up horror movie. It's more of a, what do they call, an invasion, a home invasion type of horror movie is what I would call it.
I see this movie as an action horror. Again, it has elements of horror in it.
Yeah, definitely the action, for sure.
Somebody's breaking into your house, automatically that's horror.
That's horrific.
Yeah, that's a terrifying thing to happen.
Yep.
And I know there's a lot of people out there who are like, oh, this isn't a horror movie. Strictly, no, it's not. But it does have elements of horror. And as we've stated before, our podcast does horror and horror-related movies.
Yeah, and so, you also have to remember there's different genres of horror out
there,
too.
Oh, God, hundreds.
I mean, there's, you know, the universal monster horror, there's psychological horror, there's home invasion stuff, slasher, oh, of course.
Haunted house movies,
all sorts of
possession
stuff.
Movies.
There's
subgenres of every single one of them.
Yeah.
And the subgenres of the subgenres.
Okay, so, well, with that being said, let's finish up the ending of this plot. Then we'll get more into it. I'm having too much fun here. So, okay, so they're at the battle scene. And right when Scrooge believes, this gives Santa enough magic to go up a nearby chimney. And Scrooge has Santa pinned right against the chimney. And this chimney is... I think it's only a chimney because the house has been dilapidated,
right?
And it's messed up, and it's this broken down chimney. But it's
a chimney.
How? But it's there. right before Scrooge is about to take him out, pulling Scrooge up with him, causing his body to get crushed on the way up. This part was cool. So he believes. Santa says, I forget exactly what he says, but he says, there's just one problem. You still believe in me or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he holds his finger to his nose and he goes up the chimney and he has Scrooge with him. And it shoots chunks of Scrooge out the top of this chimney. I mean, blood and gore and chunks everywhere. And you can hear it. It splatters. Just as Santa feels victorious, Thorpe comes out of nowhere, one of the other mercs, shoots him four times and prepares to execute him until Gertrude, who grabbed a nearby gun, puts one in Thorpe's head, which was pretty, it was pretty unexpected, but it was awesome.
Yeah, especially for Thorpe.
Yeah, I mean, it came out of nowhere, because you didn't even know where the hell he was. The whole time I was thinking, wait, where was this guy? He must have, snuck up, on the way during the battle or something, because he was nowhere to be found before. So the other Lightstones arrive and try to help Santa. Santa's on the ground, dying pretty much. I mean, he got shot four times. Jason burns some of the money to keep him warm because he said he was getting really cold.
Yeah.
Despite Alva's protests, of course, one of the bitch daughter there wants, cares more about the money still. It appears as though Santa is dying until Trudy tells him she still believes in him and always will, no matter what. Linda then says she believes because Santa saved her family. And Jason follows. Bertrude, Gertrude, and Alva all join in, allowing Santa. Yeah. So this allows Santa to be revived. And I remember it's really funny because Santa he sits up, Undertaker style, kind of. Like he sits up and he's like, he coughs or something. He's like, what happened? He thanks the Lightstones, who return the gratitude. And in this part, I laughed. He finds the reindeer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, I think he walks over to him and he's like, oh, now you show up, you little bastards, or something like that.
I'm talking to you, Prancer.
He starts he's not really angry. It's just more of an irritated type of, him talking to the reindeer. It's so I don't know. It's cute. It's funny.
Went back and got my spare sack.
And so, he finds a reindeer returning with his sleigh along with the original Skull Crusher with a note from Mrs. Claus that says, you might need this, or I think you might need this, or something. Santa bids the Lightstones farewell and flies off into the night to continue his Christmas duties. And that's pretty much the end of the movie. Oh, yeah, and what does he say to the reindeer? He's like, oh, you got my spare sack? I can't be mad at you guys. I can't be mad at you.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he loves his reindeer. And then, during the credits, you got Bertrude makes a stupid TikTok video over a dead merc's body to let his followers know that Santa really does exist. I don't know. I thought it was stupid because
I thought it was kind of cute in a sense. He was letting everybody know that Santa is real. Santa is real. And here we go again with me being the old man shaking my fist at the clouds. This whole TikTok and Facebook and FaceTalk and whatever the hell it is. These kids getting on there and doing all this nonsense to get likes and whatever just annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah, it annoys me too. It's a different time though, and yeah, I don't know. I just ignore it. But
I'm sure the stuff that I did when I was a kid annoyed the shit out of my parents too.
Ultimately, though, this part in the movie during the credits was stupid, but at least it was during the credits. It wasn't the actual movie. So overall, though, this movie, it's a pretty simple plot for the most part. I mean, it's you've heard it before. It's only with Santa Claus. Violent Night. That's just awesome. So let's get into our overall ratings. What do you say?
Let's do it.
Who's going first this time?
Oh, you go first.
Damn it.
I can go first. I don't care.
No, it's okay. I'll go first. The film's biggest weakness is that it doesn't know what it wants to be. Is it a farce? Is it a serious action flick with a ridiculous premise? Or is it a screwball comedy? It's pretty much all the above. I mean, personally, I like it, but that's just something that I think is a weakness. And instead of picking one of those, it's all three at different times throughout this whole movie. Violent Night works best when it doesn't take itself too serious. And we said this earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The ridiculousness of Santa in full garb absolutely wrecking bad guys is enough to provide the desired laughs. Believe me. Sprinkle in a little girl in danger and you've got yourself a movie. However, including cartoon characters behaving in ways that no human would rips you out of the moment and ruins any emotional investment that you might have had. And this film has its fair share of this. There's a thrill in watching Harbor Santa tear through the invaders, utilizing pool balls, darts. Ah, we didn't mention the darts. Yeah. Ah, there's so many cool kills in this movie. So, I mean, there's just some great kills in this. The star ornament to illuminatingly gruesome effect. So it's frustrating when the story pivots the Hallmark family reunion, which unnecessarily balks things out. Harbor is excellent, authentic. I can't talk today. Authentically wheezing around like a man who's had centuries of world celebration on his shoulders. He's a gift compared to the villains. So it's a pleasure to see them violently dispatched, I will say. Very much so, especially when Bjorn is taken out.
Yeah, that was...
But for every abominable use of an ice skate blade, I'm glad I wrote this down, there's some dull family drama to sludge through, and the joyfully macabre fun melts away into unfortunate mundanity. I think that David Harbour's performance makes up for a lot in this movie. He carries the whole movie. Without him, this movie would not work. My overall rating, with all of this being said, is going to be a solid 7.5. I absolutely enjoyed this movie, and I recommend this to any horror fan, any person who loves action, but just keep in mind, do not take it too seriously. Mike, it's off to you, bud.
Okay, so this movie I will give an 8.5. And a lot of that is because it surprised me. I saw the previews for this movie, and I thought it looked really cool. It had David Harbour in it. From the previews, it was kind of like, really, another action Santa movie? Because there's a lot out there, and most of them just suck. Yeah, there's just so many out there that are not good. But I decided to give this one, actually because of my parents, because they wanted to watch it, and I figured, oh, what the hell, how bad could it be? And it really shocked me. Yes, there are some weak parts to it, and sometimes it does kind of forget what it is. But overall, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. Having it as a, you know, yearly watch is definitely good as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I will give this an 8.5.
It's definitely a yearly watch for me. Watch it when it first came out, watch it this year, and definitely plan on watching it next year. So for the gore-o-meter, I'm going to say that most of the deaths are pretty bloody. I mean, blood splatters and spurts. Some of the more graphic deaths are cut away or in the dark, mostly in that one scene in the garage in the dark. There are definitely a couple scenes which linger on gore in detail. And it's awesome.
Yes, it is.
We talked a lot about the deaths throughout the plot. I mean, he uses a candy cane. He uses an ice skate. He uses darts, pool balls, a freaking star which he plugs in. I mean, there's just such cool deaths in this. Even stuff that he didn't accidentally mean to do, like when the dude falls on the icicle coming up from the ground. The deaths in this are awesome. They're is a lot of brutal stuff in here. And so for me, everybody knows I'm a gore hound if you've heard our recent episodes. So I expect a lot of gore. I mean, for something to get a really high rating. I mean, that's just me. Could be different for somebody else.
Oh, sure.
But I mean, really, overall, I mean, this was a solid 7 for me on the gorometer. How about you, Mike?
I think this is going to be the farthest you and I have been apart since we started this podcast. I would give this a 9. I would give this a 9, going very close to a 9.5.
What is your favorite death or kill or just most brutal scene? What do you think?
Gingerbread.
Yeah, Bjorn.
That whole
Bjorn
scene was so
the ladder
great.
And the
yes.
Nail. Yeah, yeah.
It was so great. And then the scene after that with Peppermint. That whole just of
the whole sequence there put together those
was
with those two.
Absolutely
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. It was.
But yeah, I would give this because it was so well done and the gore was just fantastic looking.
It was. It wasn't too over the top and they didn't sugarcoat it.
There
it
was some over the top. Like, again, the guy who got impaled on the icicle.
Well,
the way that was well done.
Yeah, I mean, what I mean is, like, when they made the blood and the gore, and like, not it actually happening, but when the blood would come out, or, like, when he, for example, when he takes that ice skate, I mean, there's one part where he just flat out decapitates the dude.
Yeah.
He sticks him with the ice skate against the wall, and his body slides down. Mm-hmm. Even that was well done.
Oh, yeah.
Over the top, but well done as far as like showing the amount of the gore and the blood. If you can understand what I mean. Maybe not.
No, I get exactly what you're saying. But it's like the part where Scrooge gets pulled up through the chimney.
Oh, God.
That was freaking amazing.
It was a great idea. For a Santa movie, I mean, what better, you know, ending for like your main kill, like mm-hmm. your number one kill to end a movie with something to do with Santa and a chimney and blood and gore. Come on.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Yeah. It's perfect.
So, yeah, this would be a 9 for me.
I would have liked to see more, though.
Well, of course, I would like to see more. I mean, again, is this like the Terrifier movies?
No, of course
but
not.
But there is a lot of very well done gore in this movie.
And like you said earlier, apples and oranges.
Yeah, blood oranges.
Well, I mean, I think that we both can agree that the deaths and kill scenes in this are amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And even if you're not a fan of Christmas movies, or even if you're not a fan of action movies, I mean, you have to give it a chance. You just give it a shot, because just the kill scenes alone are phenomenal. And David Harbour's performance in this is great.
Oh, yeah.
Like, minus the action and stuff, just the way that he portrays Santa Claus as being a guy who's lost faith in children all over the world and humanity being miserable, and all they do is, like, the opening sequence when he talks about how all kids do is want and they take, and all they do is want and they whine until they get what they want, and I'm sick of it. He does a fantastic job acting this part.
I agree. And, you know, he's got this, you know, he's very wore out, he's very worldly, but he's very tired and very frustrated, but still he has compassion and love for kids.
Yeah, it's still there. So it's just,
he's just sick of their shit.
Yeah.
And I can relate.
Yeah. So we had a question, actually, that was on our Facebook page right before we started this episode from Peter Renko. So, Pete, if you're listening, what's going on, buddy?
Thanks, bud.
Hopefully you're still listening. I know he mentioned that you didn't want any spoilers, and we always do spoilers, but you wanted to know why this movie is not kid-friendly. Well, it's pretty self-explanatory if you listen to the whole episode, but Mike, why don't you elaborate a little bit on this? If Pete's just jumping in, or if anyone is just jumping in now, why would you not recommend this to a kid?
So, there's a lot of cussing in this movie. There's a lot of gore in this movie.
Ice skates.
Yeah.
Darts. Sledgehammers.
The premise of the movie has a very good moral to it.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you're, I would say 16 up would be the proper age to watch this movie. I don't think smaller kids would be able to understand it. And I think it more than anything else, it would end up scaring them.
I have a 10-year-old daughter. I would not let her watch this movie. So if that says anything.
Yeah, this is not made for little ones. If you want a Christmas movie for your kids.
Krampus. Yeah. That's a good
Krampus.
One. Yeah.
You know, of course, there's always the classics and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is a rough one for little kids. So
if you're looking for something scary, Christmassy, I mean, yeah. Krampus is one that comes to mind. I would also recommend Scrooged, but
yeah, we're going to do that one sometime.
Yes. So hopefully that answers your question, Peter. Appreciate your feedback. And,
yeah, thanks for sending the question.
Yeah, and all your feedback on the, you know, liking the podcast and everything. We greatly appreciate it. You,
yes,
and
we do. We try our best.
Yes, we do. So on that note, do you got any final thoughts, Mike, about this movie, Violent Night?
Just as always, if you haven't seen it, by all means, give it a shot.
If you're 16 and older.
Yes. Yes. Little ones need not apply.
No, it's definitely not kid-friendly. I would not recommend this to any kid, but I would recommend this to any horror fan, action fan, or just someone who just wants a really different type of Christmas movie this year and doesn't want the same old stuff. This one is, it really does have a great message throughout the movie, though.
It really does. And as always, if you do see it, I really hope you enjoy it.
Violent Night's the perfect antidote to all those typical festive movies we see every year. And David Harbour, he totally slays it as Santa in this brilliant black comedy action film that's just insane, as well as ripping the Christmas movie genre a new one. I gotta say that. From the start of the proceedings, right through to the climax. You're in for a roller coaster ride of fun, emotion, and comedy. And let's not forget the extreme violence. I mean, after all, it is called Violent Night. You'll never look at a candy cane in the same way again after this. I guarantee it. I believe this film will become a classic in its own right, and it totally deserves to. Despite feeling we're a little familiar in the territory at times, I can assure you we most certainly aren't. We'll be looking at our chimneys in a whole new light after this film. So seriously, grab your eggnog, put the kids to bed, and prepare for this Santa to take you on the ride of your life. The film is a sleigh ride of fun from the start, and one I can't wait to take again, honestly. As cheesy as that all just fucking sounds, it had to be said. This completes our 15th episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show, our third in our holiday horror special. Thank you all for listening. Remember, you can listen to our previous episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, iHeart, and more. If you have any suggestions or requests, comments, anything, go to our Facebook page, check us out, and feel free to send us on a message over.
Yeah.
Please don't forget to rate us. And also, don't forget to lock your doors and your windows and check the closet and look under the bed. Until the next time, I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
Always remember, keep the horror alive.